Hey there, it's Kona Gallagher, host of And Then They Were Gone and Day by Day True Crime Stories, and I'm here to bring you an amazing opportunity to win some incredible prizes, all for a good cause. Join the Texas Advocacy Project's The Big Game Football Squares Raffle on February 9th, 2025, and help support survivors of power-based abuse. For every $100 donation, you secure a square and a chance to win amazing prizes. You can choose from two exciting grids. The Hawaiian Paradise Grid offers a grand prize of a seven-night stay for two at a luxury resort in Oahu or the Big Island. Or play the Beachfront Mexico Grid for a chance to win a four-night, all-inclusive stay for two at a five-star Marival Luxury Resort in Banderas Bay or Nuevo Nayarit, Mexico. Your contributions help survivors understand their rights, navigate the justice system, and secure emergency protective orders. To participate, visit TexasAdvocacyProject.org and select your grid today. Don't miss out. Tune in to the Texas Advocacy Project's Facebook page on February 9th, 2025, during the game for live updates on winners. Prizes are awarded at the end of each quarter, with the grand prize at the game's conclusion. So score big for a cause. Visit TexasAdvocacyProject.org to learn more. Hey everyone, it's Kona. I just wanted to hop on real quick and apologize for there not being a new episode this week. COVID got me. I got. If you follow us on TikTok, I posted a couple videos from my basement where I was quarantining, and I really tried to get an episode together, but my brain and my fingers and the rest of my body were not cooperating with each other. So nothing new this week, but what we did have, you know, which is even better this week, is the new Taylor Swift album came out. The Tortured Poets Department anthology. It's 31 songs. And while I had insomnia, I was listening to it. And one of the songs actually reminded me of an episode that we've already done. And it's one of my favorite episodes because it is a little bit lighter than a lot of the ones that we do. And it's very unlike every other episode that we've done in that we had a resolution going into it. The case I'm talking about is the case of Richard Hoagland, and the song that I'm referring to is the song Florida. Now, I'm going to play you a little bit of Miss Swift herself talking about the inspiration behind the song, and then we'll kind of reconvene about what I'm talking about.
And you just want to escape from everything you've ever known. Is there a place you could go? I'm always watching like Dateline. People, you know, have these crimes that they commit. Where do they immediately skip town and go to? That they go to Florida. You know, they like try to reinvent themselves, have a new identity, blend in. And I think
it's almost as if she was reading my script for this episode. Richard Hoagland was a family man from Indianapolis, Indiana, and on February 10th, 1993, he called his wife from work, told her he was going to the ER, and then never came back. And while it may be a little bit of a spoiler alert, you may have been able to guess by this point that he went to Florida to reinvent himself and start a new life. Now, of course, you know, this being the real world, it didn't exactly turn out the way that he planned. And that's what this episode is about. So please buckle up and enjoy this re-release of the episode that we did on Richard Hoagland. And we will be back here with a brand new episode next week. Richard Hoagland was a successful family man who lived with his wife and two sons in a suburb outside of Indianapolis, Indiana. On February 10, 1993, he called his wife from work and told her he was sick and heading to the emergency room. He never came home again. For over 23 years, his wife Linda and their two sons wondered about his fate. But in 2016, a bizarre story emerged that proved Richard Hoagland wasn't who they or anyone else thought he was. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Richard Hoagland. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
This case that I'm bringing you today is Richard Hoagland. And I know some of you listening might be confused because you're like, but you did this one already.
Right. Hoagie. Right.
Right. But that is Robert Hoagland. There was another married, middle-aged father who had gone missing and was eventually found. But this man was Richard Hoagland.
Weird.
Yeah.
Not so, from the same area, right?
No. Okay. Indiana and Connecticut.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
That would be really weird.
I know, right? If they're like both from Connecticut or whatever. Richard Hoagland and Linda Eisler married in 1982. It was Richard's second marriage and Linda's first. Children followed soon after. Two boys named Matthew and Doug. Richard Hoagland worked in insurance and was able to afford his family an upper middle class lifestyle. They owned a large home outside of Indianapolis and had a speedboat that they would take out on the lake. They went on lavish vacations, and Richard owned a closet full of expensive suits. They were living the American dream. But that all began to change in 1993. Linda noticed that Richard was beginning to act strangely. Her husband, who was usually spontaneous and fun, was now acting distant and withdrawn. She feared that he was sinking into depression. Her fears only grew when on February 10th, 1993, she received a bizarre phone call from her husband. Richard, who was at work, called her and told her that he was sick. Sick enough that he thought he had to go to the emergency room.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, like, very bad. And Linda, of course, you know, being a good wife, said that she would go with him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you don't want to just have your husband going to the emergency room alone. But he said that he couldn't wait and that he was going to go now. About 40 minutes after this phone call, Linda left to go pick up their son, Doug, who was six at the time, from daycare. When she got home, their older son, Matthew, who was nine, was home alone. Now, this was in 1993, before most people had cell phones, and Linda was worried about her husband. So, like, he was supposed to have been home with their son, Matthew. And so, obviously, it sounds like he's at the hospital. She's worried, you know.
Well, sure. But, I mean, any emergency room visit is going to be a lot longer than 45 minutes.
Exactly. Exactly. Even if there's, like, nothing wrong with you.
Do we know, did he say anything about what symptoms he had or anything like that to his wife?
Not that I saw, just that he was very sick. Okay. I'm sure he did, because it would be really insane if he didn't.
I'm definitely going to call you the next time I feel sick and just say, I feel sick.
I feel sick. I'm going to the ER.
And not anything. Yeah. No further information available.
But yeah, it was not in the articles that I read. I think, you know, by the time a lot of this was written about, nobody really cared.
Fair point.
But of course, at the time, she's worried because, you know, she hadn't heard from him. He wasn't home. Like, she didn't know what was going on.
And she's got a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old who, I mean, I guess you could leave the 9-year-old in charge of the 6-year-old, but that's kind of pushing it.
Yeah, it was the early 90s, so like maybe, know. But yeah, you're right. It is a little, it is pushing it. So she, of course, called the hospital, but he wasn't there. So, you know, that was like the closest hospital that she called. So she called a different hospital, but no Richard. He hadn't checked in at any hospital in the area. Linda was growing more confused and more concerned by the minute, but then Richard called.
Did he say where he was?
Well, not exactly. When he called that evening, he said the words that would change the course of Linda's life. Quote, I can't live this way anymore. I feel you would be better off without me. End quote.
That's not good.
No. And that is all he said before hanging up. So no time for follow-up questions. No, like, what do you mean by that? No, you know, we won't be better without you. Like, what are you planning? You know, she must have been absolutely terrified, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, does that mean, I'm sure it's running through her head, does that mean, is he divorcing me? Is he suicidal?
Exactly. It could be any number of things, none of which are good.
Right, yeah.
So she was frantic, you know, I'm sure running through every single possibility in her head, you know, while still trying to take care of their two kids, who, of course, they're kids. So they're like, okay, well, when's dinner, you know?
Yeah.
But then he called back and said something even more bizarre. Quote, I don't want to go to jail. I'm never coming back. End quote.
All right.
Yeah. So again, he hung up before Linda was able to ask any follow-up questions like jail.
Yeah.
Like, who's going to jail? There. Like, what are you talking about? Because to her knowledge, Richard like wasn't in any trouble. He wasn't a lawbreaker. You know, there was no reason that she was aware of that this would even be a concern for him.
And you said he sold insurance?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Like, from all accounts, he's like a standard family man, 9-to-5 type of dude, like no, you know, vices that she's aware of, like nothing, you know, she could not figure out what any of this was about. Like all of it came out of the blue. You know, he left for work that morning and she thought everything was normal. So after he called, you know, she didn't know what to do. So she started looking around the house to see if she could like find any answers to whatever the hell was happening. All of Richard's things were still there. His clothes, his passport, his toothbrush. You know, he of course had his wallet with him, obviously. But it was February in Indianapolis, which is terrible weather, and his winter coat was still there. Which honestly is weird because it seems strange to me that he wouldn't have just taken that to work that morning, you know? Right,
yeah. Whether he was planning this or not.
Exactly. Yeah. Regardless, like you would think that you would take your winter coat to work with you. So when he didn't return home, Linda reported him missing. I don't know a lot about, you know, how police immediately reacted. I'm sure that they didn't like hop to it that night, but it does sound like they started an investigation relatively quickly. Like, they might have made her wait that stereotypical 48 hours. I'm not exactly sure, but a few days later, they were actively looking and they found his car. Richard's car was found abandoned at the Indianapolis International Airport.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So, of course, you know, they're thinking like, oh, he like took off.
Right.
But his name wasn't listed on any flights that had gone out.
Hmm.
However, keep in mind, this is pre-9/11.
Right.
And while you did still have to like show ID to get on a plane, it was a lot easier to get on a flight. You know, there were way fewer checks. Like, I think that if, you know, maybe if you had like a fake ID or something along those lines, you would have a much better chance of getting on a plane in 1993 than you would now.
Sure. But you also have to think that he had to have used a credit card to purchase the ticket.
No, because you could do it in cash then.
Well, yeah, I mean, I understand that, but like, it seems kind of weird if he had like a couple $100 just in his wallet.
I don't know. I mean, he could have gone to the ATM. Or if he was planning this, you know, he could have been squirreling cash away.
Yeah, that's true.
Linda doesn't know what to make of this, though. You know, like I said, they found his car at the airport. They think maybe he took a flight, but, you know, without his name on any passenger lists, they have no clue as to one, if he did, or two, where he could have gone.
Right.
But then, later that month, Linda heard from Richard. He called her collect a few times, but offered little in the way of explanation. Linda was able to trace the calls, and they came from Aruba and Venezuela.
Oh, no extradition in Venezuela.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if he did commit some crime that he thought he was going to get arrested for, they're not going to be able to extradite him from Venezuela.
Yeah. Well, I find it amazing that he made it to Aruba and he didn't have his passport with him. So
oh, right.
He must have like had some sort of fake passport or something, because he would have had to take a plane. You know, you can't drive down to Aruba, like it's an island.
Yeah.
So I find it really interesting that he was able to get there and then from there, presumably to Venezuela. I don't know if he made stops in between, but either way, like that's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, even I don't think Aruba was like one of those countries that you could get into with just a birth certificate like Canada.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Back then. But
even if Aruba was Venezuela wouldn't. Would, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I don't know. But yeah, I mean, really, he ended up a lot further away than I think anybody expected. So Linda still, even though he had been in touch and she knew he was at least alive, like she had no idea what was actually going on or what prompted any of this. But her life was falling apart. You know, not only did she lose the husband and the father of her children, but Richard was the breadwinner and he just split, leaving her with no money or backup plan, just a bunch of maxed out credit cards. To make matters worse, police were beginning to think that there was more to the story. They started suspecting Richard of being involved in illegal business dealings. What's more is they thought Linda was in on it as well.
I wonder why they would think that.
Well, their theory was that Richard had left to set up a new life and that Linda and the boys would be following him.
I mean, if that was the case, it would be odd for her to report him missing.
Well, maybe, you know, it was a situation where, like, she was doing that to throw suspicion off of herself, right? You know, if she played the role of this confused wife who didn't know what had happened, then nobody would suspect that she was involved in these illegal business dealings.
It seems kind of elaborate, though, you know?
Yeah.
Especially considering, like, up to this point, didn't seem like any law enforcement was investigating him. So like
right.
if he was planning on picking up and starting a new life somewhere and then bring the wife and kids over, like just go and do it.
Right. And don't talk about it and just like quietly
just
split.
Disappear. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the whole family.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Linda told ABC News, quote, "They interrogated me over and over. They alluded a lot to the possibility that he was involved in some type of drug trafficking, which I had no clue." End quote. Though Linda had nothing to do with her husband's disappearance or any illegal dealings, whatever they were, she did begin to think that the police may have been onto something regarding her husband because strange things started happening. Linda noticed that she was being followed around town. When she received her mail, much of it looked like it had already been opened and resealed. And her father even found a listening device on her phone.
Interesting.
Yeah. So something was going on, but she had no idea what. Eventually, the financial mess that Richard left became too much for Linda, and she lost their house and their car. She and her boys moved in with her parents to save money, but Linda still felt like she was being watched. This feeling didn't go away, and 6 months later, she took her children and moved to another town in Indiana and basically went into hiding. She put all of her bills in her parents' name and would make her kids catch the school bus from a friend's house so that nobody knew where they lived. And this paranoia lasted 4 years. And when I say paranoia, I'm not saying that it's unjustified because, again, like her dad found a listening device on her phone.
Yeah, no.
You know,
yeah.
I don't know if whatever was going on continued for all of those years or whatever, but she definitely had a reason to be paranoid.
Yeah, it's worth the caution.
Yeah. So after the collect calls in February of 1993, Linda didn't hear from Richard again. The next contact, though, came later that year via birthday cards to Matthew and Doug, each of which had $50 inside.
A return address or stamps from another country?
No. And yeah, I don't remember and I don't have it in here specifically where it was postmarked from, but I know that it was just kind of a dead end wherever it was. The card that he sent to Doug for his 7th birthday read, quote, "Have a super birthday. You are a super boy. I love you and miss seeing you. Let your mom help spend this money. You might want to put some away. Maybe sometime soon we will get to see each other. I bet I won't even know you. It has been so long. Mind your mother. Bye, Dad. End quote. Like, what a fucked up birthday card to send your 7-year-old son after you abandoned your family, like, you know, 8 months prior or whatever.
I'm sure it came up in therapy.
Yeah. But after those cards, Richard never tried to contact his family again. No more cards, no more phone calls, nothing. As the years went on, Linda started to rebuild her life. She divorced Richard in absentia after finding out that right before he left, he maxed out a total of 26 credit cards.
Whoa.
Yeah. And even forged Linda's signature on a loan.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Now, the judge ordered Richard to pay the debts, but, you know, he obviously wasn't around to do so. But
yeah, it's meaningless, but
great.
Cool.
Well, no, it's not meaningless because, I mean, because they were married, they were her debts as well.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a really important judgment terms of, like, Linda being able to live a functional life.
Yeah, no, I wasn't thinking about it like that, but you're right.
Yeah. In 2003, 10 years after he went missing, Richard Hoagland was officially declared dead by the state of Indiana. Linda eventually remarried and worked as a nurse. Matthew grew up and started his own family. Doug, the one who was younger, who got that birthday card, had a much rougher go of it. He says now that his issues weren't related to his father's disappearance, but his mother disagrees.
I mean, they might have been related to the birthday card.
Yeah, like specifically just that fucking birthday card. She believes that the toll that, you know, Richard's whole abandonment took on her family was immense, which of course it was. Like, how could it not be?
Yeah.
When Doug was in high school, he broke his hand. The doctors prescribed him pain medicine and, like, we know.
Then it went downhill from there.
It did. You know, it happens for so many people. So that led to a drug problem that has plagued him ever since. He has spent most of his adult life in jail and prison for various just drug-related offenses. For 23 years, Linda and her two sons lived without answers. Until 2016, when she received a call from a detective in Pasco County, Florida. Detective Anthony Cardillo asked Linda if she knew a man named Richard Hoagland. She told him, yes, that was her ex-husband.
Who is also dead.
Yeah, also legally. Officially legally dead. Yeah. And had been at this point for 13 years. But this detective told Linda that they had her husband in custody. Okay, so let's talk about what a piece of shit this guy is.
Also a dumbass because he came back to the States and got arrested in Florida.
Well, 23 years later, so apparently he was kind of good at it. And you will not believe when you hear what this guy's been up to for the past 23 years.
All right, let's get into it.
So apparently Richard bounced around Aruba, Venezuela, and who knows where else in 1993. But by 1994, he landed in Florida.
He was in Florida that whole time?
That whole time.
Wow. Okay, I take it back. I guess he's not as much of a dumbass as I thought.
Yeah. I mean, a piece of shit.
Yeah.
For sure. But yeah. So he got to Florida and he rented a room from a man named Edward Szymanski. Edward was grieving the loss of his son, Terry, who had recently died in a fishing accident. Richard found Terry's death certificate and was able to use the information on it to request a birth certificate.
Ugh. That's fucked up.
Yep. Now, with that, he was able to receive an Alabama driver's license through the mail.
Through the mail?
Through the mail, which is why I assume he did Alabama instead of Florida.
Yeah.
Now, once he had that Alabama driver's license, he was able to obtain a Florida driver's license.
Gotcha.
After that, Richard began living his life as Terry Szymanski. He even got married.
As Terry Szymanski?
As Terry Szymanski.
Ugh.
Yep. And within a few years, his new wife gave birth to a son.
What the hell?
Yeah, together they built a lovely life for themselves. They bought a home and investment properties that they rented out.
Is that what he did for a living?
Yeah, basically. Richard even received his pilot's license and had his own plane.
What?
Like, he was living the life while he left his first family in financial ruin, being like followed around and listened to and spied on and just, you know, living through hell for years. Richard was finally discovered by the real Terry Szymanski's nephew. In 2013, he was looking up his family on Ancestry.com and found Terry Szymanski's marriage certificate and pilot's license, both of which were issued after they had buried him in 1991. According to an article on Medium written by Shubhanga Lakshmi, the Szymanski family was hesitant to do anything with this information. They didn't know who had stolen Terry's identity, and they didn't know if this would, like, put them in danger or what, you know? They didn't know what they were looking at, what they were walking into, potentially, right. Yeah. Nothing. But in 2016, so like 3 years later, the nephew said, you know what, screw it, and decided to contact the police anyway. When Detective Cardillo confronted Richard, he swore that he was Terry Szymanski. He provided his social security number, driver's license, and birth certificate.
Which all seemed legit.
Well, yeah, because they were really, you know, they had been issued by the proper government agencies. You know, they weren't forgeries or anything like that.
Right.
They were just gotten under false pretenses. But then Cardillo showed Richard Terry's death certificate. And then Richard finally admitted who he really was.
Hmm.
Richard was arrested for identity theft, and Indiana authorities wanted to charge him with a lot more.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Unfortunately, any other crimes, including theft for the money he took from Linda in order to start his new life, had statutes of limitations that had already run out.
Wow.
Yeah, so like the fraud, like all of that stuff. It had been 23 years, you know, and basically statute of limitations in the U.S., I mean, granted, it varies from state to state, but like pretty much beyond like murder, like 23 years, you can get away with a lot. Like most statutes of limitations are up by then.
Well, yeah. I mean, especially white collar crime.
Exactly. Like exactly.
I mean, you're talking probably 5 to 10 years at most.
Yeah. So eventually he ended up being sentenced to 2 years in federal prison for the identity theft. Mm. After his release in 2018, Linda sued Richard for back child support and was awarded $1.83 million.
Did Richard have that?
No, of course not. That hearing, though, was the first time that Richard's abandoned wife and children had seen him in person since 1993.
Good God, I can't even imagine that.
His younger son, Doug, told the Indianapolis Star, quote, "If you think you had two kids and you wanted to see them so bad, you think you'd be a little bit emotional. But this guy, nothing. There is nothing there." End quote. Neither of the Hoagland children wants to have a relationship with the father who abandoned them. Mary, the woman he married in Florida, divorced him after his arrest and was able to keep most of their assets.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah, because...
I mean, she's an innocent party in this.
Yeah, I mean, from all accounts, like, she had no idea. I mean, she thought she married Terry Szymanski, had no idea about, you know, anything that he had done in Indianapolis. So she was, from what I can tell, like, another innocent victim in all of this. It's unclear what Richard's relationship is with his youngest son, who was 19 at the time of his arrest, but Richard moved back to Indiana after he was released from prison.
What?
Yeah, like that part shocked me. It's like, dude, nobody wants you there. Like, just fucking leave.
Yeah, just pick another state.
Yeah, just like maybe Florida is done for you too, but like we have 48 more states, or just go back to fucking Venezuela.
Yeah.
Like, just get out. Nobody wants you. But that's basically it. Richard, like, apparently has some sort of job and he's working to pay Linda back, you know, but, you know, he's not going to, like, he's not going to be able to pay back $1.83 million. And he's probably working, like, the lowest, like, menial job that he can, you know, so that he doesn't have to.
Right.
But yeah, he's just a shitty person who abandoned his family. We've covered many cases in which police have believed that a missing person just ran off to start a new life. And
this is one where it actually happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's still, we still don't know like who the people were that were, that was following.
No.
Or like
never found
on her phone.
Any of that out.
Or really what crimes he even
actually committed, other than like, you know, like I said, it does sound like he was squirreling away cash or something.
Yeah.
You know, in order to make his escape. But yeah, I don't know if it was insurance fraud,
right,
or if he was involved in like illegal business dealings, if there was some sort of like crime element,
or drugs, or
gambling. Like, we have no idea what this guy was actually into. Like, nobody was really able to figure it out.
Crazy.
Yeah. And it is worth mentioning before, you know, you may start to think like, oh, well, maybe more people do run off and start new lives. Like, unlike the other stories we've told where that's been a theory, he did contact people after his disappearance, you know?
Right. Yeah. The shitty birthday card, the phone calls.
Exactly. Multiple phone calls, you know, whatever. So while, yes, some people do run off with no belongings, you know, no winter coat to start a new life, most of them are not Richard Hoagland, thankfully.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us for this very special Patreon bonus episode on a solved missing persons case. Thank you again so much for subscribing to our Patreon. If you could, actually, if you haven't left us a review, that would be great on the podcast app of your choice.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Good Pods.
Yeah, Apple, Spotify.
Spotify, anything.
Podbean, interestingly, is like our third highest source of listeners. So don't know what that's about.
Never
love
heard
it. No, yeah, they also like, it's another, you know, platform. But yeah, so Podbean, so iHeartRadio, we're everywhere. And you know, tell your friends if you like it. Obviously you do, you're on our Patreon, so thank you for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, tell your friends. You know, we are trying to grow the podcast. We've got some exciting things coming up. Oh, we just started a Facebook group.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So this is a Facebook group where you can come and discuss the episodes, but also anything having to do with missing persons cases.
Right.
So
not exclusively cases that we've covered.
Exactly. You know, we will be posting about our cases, but you can post about anything that you want. It is a public group. It's called Unsolved Missing Persons Cases. It is public. Like I said, you could get to it from our Facebook page, or you can just search for it on Facebook. But please, you know, join us. We have just gotten started like 2 days ago. So, you know, we've got a few members, but not most of our listeners. So we would love to see you there. Again, we will have a normal episode next week, so stay tuned for that. And in the meantime, we will see you here soon.
See you soon.